so I know you're going to be excited about today because you don't, and I'm not making you write on the board.
Yeah.
No? Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd say you're not an X's and O's guy.
I am, but I'm not.
Yeah. So ambiguous.
I am, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I think there's a time and place, but like, no, I enjoy doing some of it.
I like it because my OCD. I like taking out the different colored markers and making it real clear and all that. You should have seen my notes in university. I don't remember. I had at least 4 different colored pens. I always did hand notes in lectures because it was all math stuff. So there'd be like diagrams and like stuff you need to draw and all this. So like using technology for that was not optimal. So I'd have like 4 or 5 different colored pens, maybe more. All of them had a purpose. Like the titles were always this color. Subheadings were always this color. My text was always in black. My side, like things that the prof would say, I would scribble like in red on the sides of pages. It's like when I was, so that I went back, I would understand what they said. If it was like an hour, 20 minute lecture, by the end of the lecture, my hand would be hot because I'd be like ripping through pens. So my notes are like so organized, super like colored, so everything was like easy to follow. And then I'd have like chicken scratch red pen writing on the sides. It's crazy.
So fun.
And like, I loved it. I took pride in it too.
Well, I couldn't even. Yeah. That's not the way this brain works.
I know.
I'd have like, if I tried doing that, I'd start with whatever. And then just the second or third interaction with a pen and just trying to figure that out, I'd take it and I'd shove one in my eye. And then if I could last any longer, I'd shove one in my jugular.
Trachea.
Yeah. No, jugular. End this right now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I used to see kids come in and they would pull out like loose pieces of paper and one would have like a wrinkle in it or be crinkled. And I'd look and be like, what is wrong with you? Like, why do you not have a notebook? Why don't you have like some, like organize your shit, man?
Yeah.
That's the OCD brain though.
I think I asked you this before. I said about ideas. Do you see ideas?
Like in pictures?
Like if we, yeah.
Depends on what we're talking about. Like if I would need an example.
Forget it.
Like if I don't see things in pictures. No.
Let's go the alphabet. How do you see it? Like when you do the alphabet, what comes in your mind?
I see the letter.
Like one at a time?
Yeah.
See, I got a pattern that it goes like this.
Yeah.
A, B, C, like to goes up and down. Like that's in my head. I go, that's
no
how it goes.
Mine is like
weird, eh?
In my head, it would be like one letter is in focus and then the previous letter and the next letter. And it would like slide like this
just
in like perfect order. That's how I would see it in my head.
Yeah. The brains are all different.
I know. It's interesting. I remember thinking that too. It's always in terms of like numbers. I'm always thinking in terms of like numbers, logic, patterns, recipe, like this to this equals this to this equals this to this equals this, or like, that's kind of like the engineering style thinking of like the black box. Like you have inputs, you have outputs. If I put this in, I get this out, and then I can figure out what's in the box kind of thing. That's how I think of most problems, but I digress. I don't know.
Oh,
I digress. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the PowerTech Online Membership Program. If you've been listening to Andy and I wondering, hey, how are they able to get all this podcast content out there? Well, that's because of our members. For just $9.99 a month, you can get access to our online video library, including hundreds of videos of Coach Andy teaching, and have the option for consultation calls with Andy or myself to go over anything you need. We can cover training, nutrition, coaching, parenting, agents, the junior college hockey path, whatever's of interest to you. You'll also be able to participate in our popular Ask Me Anything episodes, have access to special discount codes, and be given priority for any PowerTech in-person camps or events. If you like what we're doing here and you want to support us, this is the best way to do it. Visit powertechhockey.ca/memberships or find the link in the description of this video to learn more. Okay, so you went to a AAA game on the weekend.
I did.
How was that?
It was interesting.
What was the age?
Minor Bantam, so U13, U14.
Is that 2010? 2010, yes.
Is it?
U14. U15 is 09. U16 is 08. So
let's say that's what it was.
2010 would be U14. First year hitting.
So first year hitting.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
U14.
Very interesting. So I hadn't been to a... I'm trying to think the last time I went to like a Bantam, like I've been to a couple really young kids games, like because of my nephew went to one of his games and that's different, but I'm talking, okay. So because this is what I was interested in seeing. It was two pretty well-known teams in the Toronto area, and because I was around, and so I'm like, oh, it would be good to get back and watch him. I haven't seen him probably a couple of years. No, that's not true. Yeah, it is true.
Probably since COVID.
Probably 2 years. No, no, I went. I was went on a couple to watch some of the kids the last couple of years.
Oh yeah, true, true, true.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm talking. This is the Toronto area. Okay. So, and then one of the coaches has a former NHLer, not like a million games, but played in the NHL. So
the head coach of one of the teams.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know of the other team, but so I'm going, okay, this will be pretty good to watch. And it was fine. Like what I mean by that, it was fine. It was just hockey. But it was everything that I say on the podcast, like when I talk about youth hockey, is exactly what it was.
To a T.
Yeah.
To a T.
Yeah. So it was just interesting because there is, and this is not critical, right? Like, I wanted this to be clear. It's not critical. It's just what I'm saying about this is a lot of people get really, really caught up in a lot of things, and there's really no reason for most. Does that make sense? But like the game itself, so went there, and parents are nuts. Nice, not being negative. Yeah. No, I don't mean it like that, though. Like, parents are emotional and they're intense. So, like, I've never understood, and I'm not saying you shouldn't do this or you should, but I couldn't understand. Well, here's the mindset, right? So I got there, and it was just starting the first period, and I just put myself in the middle of, like, a stand-up on the side, had a coffee, put my coffee down, and there's a couple of people there, but whatever, and I'm watching, and, like, you could tell really quickly what team was theirs, which that's fair. Then the period end, and then they switch to make sure they're in the offensive zone. And, of course, the goalie dads do the flip-flop. And I don't know who's who, but it's very typical, right? And, like that's number one, like the mindset of a parent. It's like, I'm going to watch my kids score or our team get goals. And as opposed to just watch the game or I want to see what he does. It is in how we play in our D zone. Like, people don't really pay that much attention to that. So that was pretty neat. Then I was watching, this isn't rocket science to anybody, but then I'm watching the game, and this is like AAA really good hockey. And because I've watched so much OHL, and I'm watching, and I go, you know, I say it's not real hockey yet. And I don't mean that, like, it is real hockey, but it's not system. It's not roles. It's just guys go out and play. So for a lot of it, you couldn't really tell what the systems were because they probably weren't that strong. Like, evident.
Yeah.
You could just see, you could kind of see there was a couple guys that were bigger that could get some stuff done. You could see some smaller guys with some skill that could kind of get some stuff done. You saw the in-between. So then I was asking myself, okay, that kid that's small. So I watched the one kid, he was smaller and he had some like grit to him and stuff, but it was very, very small. So I was wondering, is he a year younger? Is he a late bloomer? Is he going to be really good? And is this what he's going to, like, he just doesn't have a chance because, you know, he just might not grow. Are these bigger guys that are kind of a little bit more physical or maybe not making the best plays, but they're in the mix and whatever. Is that because they're just bigger? Is it all going to even out? You could see it. Was the skill level really, really high? I would say no. And is that rude?
No.
I would just say it was like nothing. It was nothing where I would go, okay, these kids are something. Right. And then it was just playing hockey. So like, my point to this is like how serious people are. Like, they have no idea
what it becomes.
Players, parents, and I think a lot of coaches, what it becomes. Exactly. What it becomes. How certain things you do. So, and then my other side is I'm going, I don't know if I could be a scout for an OHL team or a college team.
Yeah,
I don't know.
How can you tell?
I don't know if I could do it. They do incredible jobs. Like, for the most part, they do a really good job. They miss some. They hit on a lot, but I don't know how you would do it because there's so many variables with it. So that was it. But this is the part that I thought was really neat is I was watching And the coach shortens the bench big time on this one team particularly. Like major, major shortening the bench. And I know a lot of people say, yeah, well, it's triple A hockey. Okay, let's say that. So I was watching the penalty kill. Like there was no, like to me, there was no on the three lines. And here, that's, I really looked at it. I said, there's only, not like I've never been to a hockey game, but it's been a while. Where it's only three lines, man.
Yeah, that's a lot of ice.
It's a lot of ice. Yeah. So like when you have to like shorten it that much all the time, and then there was penalty after penalty. And anyway, so my point to this is like what I really noticed is like a couple minutes in the game, the first power play happened. It's a 5-on-4. So the team with even the NHL coach, they set themselves in a box, and the box was like really, and I don't know if it was on purpose or if it's not, but let's say it was. It was a tighter box. It wasn't like there was zero chasing. So basically you had four guys, and the other team set up, however they set up, I couldn't even tell what it was, but it was like basically nothing in front of the net. So I'm looking at a power play that just kept moving the puck around, right? And then once in a while, a kid would go and take a shot for no particular reason. Or not for no particular reason, but it's okay, it's time to get a shot on. But there was nothing set, nothing really that identified this is what kind of power play it is. But I was watching the team with had an NHL coach, and all four guys, they really didn't move. And they really didn't have to, because the other team didn't counter it at all. So they just kept way to the outside. So, okay, so someone would say, well, that guy was a smart coach. Okay, let's say he was for having that box. Then you don't have to shorten the bench because no one did anything. Yeah. Everyone did the same thing, kind of stood there in a couple feet and just waited for an opportunity. So I was watching different things like that, like how it was executed and stuff, and I'm like, it's incredible. So it's, I don't know, everyone could have had an opportunity on that PK, and they were killing a lot of penalties. To just go out there. You didn't need, there was no one doing a spectacular job. There was no loose pucks forcing it, nothing like that. So it was just kids playing hockey the way they think they had to play hockey. So what's my point to this? My point to this is, I guess, you know, we talk about how good certain levels are, and they are good. I mean, it's good hockey. It's good hockey. Like you get the best players in that age group for.
It's as good as it can be.
As good as it can be, but it's like so far off from what hockey will be if you move on,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't mean this to be negative. So I'm just looking at it and going, like, okay. So here's my next thing. Out of those two teams, and maybe it was just two teams that won't have anybody real exceptional, but like I guess one is at the top of the league, and another one is like. Mid pack or a little bit less. So I would assume like someone's standing out to me, like someone's really standing out to me. And the one kid that did was more of a defensive guy, but it was like interesting. Yeah. So so my last piece of that is like, so much goes into it as like the anxiety and the emotions and the, what do we need to do next? Like this team's, here's one, like, because I was talking in a consult the other day about someone wanting to move teams again. They were in the GTA. And I'm like, at what point do you stop? Like, that's what I said. Like, at some point you got to stop and you got to stick with the team and go, because no matter what you do, is going to get, whatever your problems are here, going to be somewhere else or something else is going to come up.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of rant that was, but.
No, it's kind of like throwing a few bows on that, I guess. You said a bunch of stuff there, but one of the things was you're talking about how difficult it would be if you were a scout or you don't know if you could scout. And I remember Dalton Prout talking, he's a pro scout now, and he was talking about how you have to try to find the good, because for people like you and I or even higher level people that are scouting for higher, like pro, NHL, OHL, whatever, it's easy to find the holes in kids' games because all their game is holes. Because to your point, that this isn't what hockey is going to be. Right. This isn't what it turns into something much different than what it is at minor hockey. So if you're watching players or you're scouting, you're trying to find the good points of their game, because if you try to find the bad points, all you're going to find is bad points, because unless you have a particular standout player, which those are your first round, second round, high end guys. Right. But outside of that, it's like, how do you find a 11th round pick. Like, what are you looking for? Right. So it's like, if you can't find the good, then all you're going to see is the holes. And like, of course you don't want the guy that all their game is holes. Right. So it's hard to see, but I was flashing back when you were talking to a couple teams in our area that are really, or were and still are top end AAA teams. And this would have been 2 years ago. So they would have been at the time, let's say you 13. And I remember there's a lot of buzz about these two teams. And I've said this before on the podcast, how I like drank the Kool-Aid. I was like, okay, like these guys must be unreal. Like all I'm hearing is the buzz. And so I went to watch them play. And it was exactly what you said. It's little kid hockey. It's little kid hockey. The fastest guy can skate by everybody. The strongest guy can blow through everybody. The guy with the best shot scores. You know, and you have guys that obviously have a little bit more than others in terms of ability. But I was expecting exactly what you're saying. The systems, the passing it around, the strategy of the game. And I think that's, I think that's probably maybe not the only thing, but one of the big things that I notice when I watch, even with some of the U18 teams that we play now, it's like there's not a lot of strategy that you see. So even teams that have their systems, it's not like this is our system, and then if they do this, we'll do this. It's kind of like this is what we practice, just go do this. Whereas like in the game, when you start playing at higher levels, it's like, okay, they're doing this, let's switch to this. Oh, they switch to this, let's switch to that. And the chess game part of it is
line matching, all that stuff.
It's almost 100% absent in youth hockey. Like very few coaches that I know, very few teams that I've played for in youth hockey had that from their coaching staff, where it would be like, we're actually going to play some strategy here. And I think that's kind of more what you're pointing to, like when you're talking about they're set up in their penalty kill and the four guys are just standing there. The other team is just passing it around. It's like, okay, it looks like they have a set power play penalty kill, but they don't really, because they don't know
this,
how to,
this wasn't
right. Because like, they don't know how to attack and then counter attacks and then counter the counter and work around, because that's not part of the development yet, because they're just trying to figure out how to play their positions even, or they're trying to figure out how to not miss their passes. You know, so that kind of stuff is what dominates more of youth hockey. And I think agreeing with what you're saying is people don't know that. They don't see that. They don't identify that. And they don't know or understand what it will become if they play at a higher level. You know, if they play at a junior A level or an OHL level or a college level or whatever. Because I'll tell you right now, like when I was playing university, the whole game was just systems. And like the team that I played for, we were just systems teams to death. Because we didn't have the high-end ability on our team. So every single thing that any team did, we had a thing we were going to try to do against it. You know, we would study film on it. We would go through their systems. We would watch them do their breakouts against other teams. We'd watch them do their end zone against other teams. We would watch their key players, and it would be like, okay, this guy likes to do this. Here's our strategy. This guy likes to do this. This is our system. We're going to use this breakout because they do this forecheck and all that stuff. And you don't see that in youth hockey. That's not there. So even if you think you have a kind of a grasp on it as a coach, you don't really, because it changes so much and the game becomes all of that. We didn't even touch on roles there. Like you mentioned roles, but without even getting into that, like players don't have them, you know, Players are just playing.
Yeah. And my point of that wasn't to say that needs to be
right.
Right. That's not what I was saying.
It's just pointing out the difference.
We're just pointing out the difference of like how different the youth hockey is. So my other point to that is if you are a team that can recruit and get the best 8 to 10 guys or the really top end 8 to 10 guys, then the coaching is almost irrelevant because you're just going to have better players. Like I saw it with my own eyes, and you might be able to run a little bit better systems and stuff, but whatever you're teaching, because the skill level is so much better, right? It makes it easier. Yeah, I don't know. And then it was interesting. I don't know.
So I'm going to layer this in now because I feel like it kind of fits what we're talking about. I'm noticing this for myself as a coach. I'm not like a professional coach, right? I'm not pursuing a career in coaching at the moment. Maybe at some point I will. But in my head, I'm not trying to be a coach in life. And I have a hard time understanding the shorten the bench thing, because in youth hockey and minor hockey, whether you win or lose, it actually doesn't really matter. So you want to win. You want to do well. As you get to, let's say, around your draft, you're in Ontario. If you play deeper into the playoffs, more scouts will come to your games and watch and all of that, and maybe you get some more opportunities and all that's fine. But generally speaking, whether you win or lose, it doesn't actually matter too much. And for me, as the coach, like, my primary objective is to make sure that guys develop, make sure that our top end guys are going to be our top end guys, make sure they keep getting better and learning the game. But then our bottom end guys, it's like, they still need to get better and do better and be better. And I think that a lot of times coaches can get so caught up on trying to win the game, or if they maybe a little bit more on a little bit more of a, I don't know if malicious is the right word, note, if they're, or selfish note, if they have a couple players that they're invested in that they're trying to get moving on to higher levels, you can start to forget about the rest of your team. And like, to your point, in minor hockey, most teams are going to be three lines, some are less, but you don't really start getting four lines until U18, really. So I'm noticing it even with our U18 team. Like, we run a three-line team, and like, that's a ton of ice. Like, the guys are playing a lot. So if you don't have that third line able to do something, then at a certain point, like, your top-end guys are going to be gassed. They're going to run out of juice. They're going to get hurt. Something is going to happen where you can't just keep plugging those guys in. And you can't never put those other guys on the ice. It's like if you're playing your goalies, it's like you have your starter, but you have to give your backup goalie some games. Otherwise, what if your starting goalie gets hurt and they can never play?
Or just tired, lose confidence, right? Blah, blah, blah.
So one thing that I had this conversation with a parent the other day, and we were talking about this exact concept of teams shortening the bench. And I was explaining to them something like the penalty kill, right? So, and this is the side that parents don't really see. So this is how I think of it as a coach. Maybe I'm wrong, but this is my philosophy on it. If I have my top offensive players, a lot of times those top offensive players could also be my top penalty killers, right? But what do I do with the rest of my team then? Do I just have my three guys play the whole game and nobody else plays? So my natural inclination as the coach is to say, okay, my offensive guys are going to score my goals because they're the more offensive guys. I'm going to have them prioritized on the power play. My less offensive players, even if they're weaker defensive players, I'm going to focus more on having them become better defensive players so that they can get more ice and still contribute. Because if they don't contribute, then I'm going to run out of options at a certain point. What if somebody gets a 10-minute misconduct? What if somebody gets a hit from behind? What if somebody gets hurt? What if our bench is short or whatever? Now I have to put a person who's hasn't done anything in one of these other situations. That's worse for the team. So on the individual level, as the coach, I can look at a guy and say, okay, you're my top player. It would be good for you to be a top penalty killer as well. It would be good for you personally as an individual, but for the team, it's not good. It's not good because if you do everything, that means no one else is doing anything. So on the individual side, like, I get kids on my team still, they'll come to me and be like, how do I get on the penalty kill, whatever. And I'll say to them, for some of them, they don't prioritize defensive play. So I'll say that to them. It's like, you need to show me that you give a shit about your defensive zone, and then I'll give you a chance on the penalty kill. But I will hold those better offensive players, or better players in general, to a higher standard than the weaker players. For that exact reason, is I need to give my weaker players something to do and something to be good at and an area to develop themselves as the coach. So you need to be so much better defensively that in those crunch time minutes, I'm going to pick you even over them when the game is tight or it's a championship game or whatever. But if you're not doing that, I'm going to prioritize my weaker guys because I need them to do something to contribute. And I think that is a lot of times the thing that people don't see. And they'll get caught up in that offensive, like you were saying, they sit in the offensive zone only and watch the offensive plays or whatever. They get caught up on that, or on the individual perspective, you can be like, I'm way better than that guy. Like, how come you're not playing me? It's like, you think I don't know that you're better than him? Do you think I don't know that I would love to just play you the whole game? That would be great.
Yeah, make your life easier.
Right? It would make my life way easier. It's like, just keep you on the ice the whole time. I don't have to teach these guys anything. I can just leave them there and I don't have to worry about it. But that's not coaching. That's not what it is, you know? And that dynamic, I think, is lost sometimes. So does that kind of make sense, like the philosophy of it at least?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, But the thing is like you're going to have some people, and it's not to say that we're right.
Yeah, that's just what I think of it. Yeah.
I would rather have, at the end of the day, do you want to win? Of course. Will you do whatever you're going to work your ass off to win and help your team, your players do whatever they can to win. But is it worth doing that when you have a 12 or 13-year-old? Not worth doing it, but is it at the risk of a 13 or a 12-year-old getting 2 10-second shifts a period? Like, I don't think so. Like, you want to develop the hockey players. So that's that balance between winning and development. And a lot of people say you can't do both. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. I don't know. It depends on your personnel, right? And if like, we did a podcast like that on this a little bit before, is if you're playing against, like, a top team in the States or Canada, or like a top team, and you're like a bottom feeder, like a bottom team, then like winning, trying to win, the will to win is critical, but you can't lose your shit if you lose to the best team by far that have, you know, when they're 14 and have, you know, half their team is already 6 feet tall. Because they're just that area, they get picked from that many people and stuff. It's like you're up against one, so you better be able to develop.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
I agree, and that's what I think on the coaching end. I find that to be like we were just saying before the podcast started. You're talking about a guy who's you were talking to about he was losing sleep over the fact that one of their teams couldn't get the puck out of their own D zone. I'm like, you're losing sleep.
Yeah, 10 years old.
10 year old. And this guy's not a coach. Like, he's not a full-time coach. He's not pursuing a career in coaching. So the reason that's relevant is that if you win or lose, it doesn't matter because it's not your job. Like, your livelihood doesn't depend on you winning games as it does for someone who's a professional coach. So it's like, why is he keeping you up at night? It's like, are they playing the game the right way? I'm not saying to not care about it, but to be so caught up, to your point, like, you're so engrossed in the process of being a coach or whatever the reason is that you're so, like, when, at least for me, again, this is just me, when I'm looking at my team, it's like, are we doing stuff the right way? If we never get the puck out of our end, but everybody was in the right spot and everybody was thinking the right things and we were trying to do the right thing and it didn't work out, I'm happy with that because we'll get better. You know, it will get better if we're doing the right things. But I'm not, like, losing sleep about a minor hockey team that is, they're not connecting their passes at 10 years old. You know, it's like, we need to put some time into this thing, man.
Yeah, you got
to
put some right? time. Yeah. My thing with this, I guess, when I'm thinking about what my point was of talking about that was that at the end of the day, the intensity that goes into the parents, coaches, when they're not playing at a high level, like, it needs to be intense for the players. Go and work your ass off. But, like, really just, I know that's, it's a broken record here, but just, if you can enjoy your life, like, enjoy watching your child play the game. Expectations? Yes. Expect them to work their ass off. Expect them to be listening to their coach and respectful and, you know, to expect them to compete. But where the look of that game compared to the game of an OHL game, obviously, in college and, like, the high levels of hockey is, like, two different things. It's not even close. So, and I know I know you can get caught up in seeing your kid do well and, like, you want him to be the best and all that stuff, and it's fine. But, like, there's, like, my point is there's so many things that can and will change. And I just hope these coaches, parents, kids can just get through youth hockey. And this is me looking at a different lens now, right? I know when I was watching my kids play hockey, I enjoyed it, but I also was like, there was times I was like, oh, come on, man. Like, you get your emotions and stuff, but I was able to keep it in check. But it's like, really and truly, like, try to enjoy it. It could be a good time, but I think a lot of the times it gets lost in the intensity and the kind of the bullshit of youth sports.
Yeah.
But, well, like try to enjoy it. It goes by quick.
Yeah. I want to talk about this next thing you want to talk about, because I think it dovetails nicely. Yeah. You mentioned this last week. They were learning about or heard about this thing called the time spent delusion. So why don't you talk first, explain kind of what that is and your thoughts about how that kind of applies to what we're talking about here. Because I think this is like, I think this is actually a huge thing that people are unaware of. And I think kind of explaining it the way that you've been talking to me about it a little bit will give people a little bit of a different perspective on development, whatever that means, or their training or whatever, you know?
Yeah, no, it was just, it's interesting. And it's like then I was thinking, like, I really liked the concept of this. And then it's from a wrestling coach. And he just said the time spent delusion is basically what you think, where you think you've spent your time, did you actually? So I was listening to this coach speaking. And so let me go back a little bit. So I think I've said this on podcast before. When parents talk a lot of the times, myself, I'm a parent, or when hockey players talk a lot of the time, or we look at our kids doing things, what I hear a lot is like, back when I was a kid, all we did was shoot pucks. And I call bullshit on a lot of it. When I was a kid, all they did, like, and I'll say that, when I was a kid, all I remember doing is playing sports. That's it. It's like, that's all you did other things, right? It's, you caught the fish this big, but actually it was only that big, right? So I think the time, the further you get away from the time, the more you did and the more you can kind of forget what you didn't do, right? You don't like to remember the times you were lazy. You don't like to remember the times where you didn't put in full effort or you practiced, but it's not as much as you thought, right? So when we look at this time spent delusion, it's like, okay, how much time as an adult, if you look back, if you actually look at the time that you put into your craft and your effort, did you really put in as much as you think? So, okay, that's one. But as a wrestling coach was saying, he goes, there's a delusion of how much time you actually can put into your skill. So he said, so if you're a wrestler, just like hockey, it's a very intense sport. It's not a sport that you can do for hours and hours and hours and hours intensely. Because if you did, you can't spend all day playing hockey every day. Because if you did, you'd
die.
You'd die. Yeah, you'd die. Or
you'd be dead.
Yeah, yeah. Or you'd be too skinny to walk. Like, yeah. You know, like there's only a certain amount of time that you can do and a certain amount you can do intensely, right? So he's saying this is the same in wrestling. He goes, so a lot of people think that, you know, like all they do is wrestle. It's like, well, you can't. He goes, like, basically, if you wrestle, you to be quality, let's say you could do three mornings a week plus your afternoon stuff. So he goes, you know, you wrestle for an hour and in that wrestling session, he goes, you can't wrestle by yourself. So that hour actually is, if you divide it up, you wrestle me, I wrestle you, doing a skill, right? So let's say we're doing takedowns or something like that. So I get 30 minutes, you get 30 minutes. That's if we're doing it for a full 30 minutes. That's if we don't grab a water. That's if we don't get coaching inside. So if, when you say that you did an hour of work, it might have been 30 minutes. That 30 minutes might only be 20, it might only be 15 of actually doing the work. So what he was saying is like, so you start multiplying that and, you know, over a month, over 6 months, he goes, what you think you did 6 months of work, it's actually might only be 12 days, right? And he said where the frustration part comes in with some of his students is like, he'll be working a takedown. Takedown is like, okay, we've done this like for 2 weeks in a row. He goes, I got it. He goes, no. You don't have it. You haven't done it enough. And that's the delusion of thinking that all we've done is takedowns for 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever it was. And like, I've got it. It's like, no, you're only touching it. So like when we look at the hockey training or however we want to describe that, right? We can say, let's talk about, you know, let's do the same thing. You go one or two private lessons. And this would be extreme, I think, or three private lessons in a week, or not private, like small groups in the morning sessions,
yeah, yeah. Outside like skill of your stuff hockey. Or whatever. Yeah.
So focused on skill. Okay. So now you got to look at, is the coach smart enough to actually spend time on one thing long enough? How many guys are on the ice? How much time are you actually doing the skill? So that hour of ice of real time doing the skill might or might not. Like as you separate, if there's 5 guys or 10 guys or 15 guys or 3 guys, the teaching, the setup, the actual doing of the drill, the resting, what does that hour actually entail of actually work spent? So at the end of the day, you might say I spent an hour on the ice. you know, I worked this skill for an hour, but the hour is not really an hour. It might be 15 minutes, 10 minutes, seven, right? So it's no wonder it takes so long for someone to master a skill, right? So then on the other side, it's like, it's good that you're doing it, but then doesn't it make more sense now to spend time on your own doing it? And that's where I think the real benefits come from, is now you can kind of measure more. I shot pucks for 1 hour, yeah. Right? That's actual time.
So just let me.
I know I went all over, and I got so much to think about here.
No, it's all interesting stuff, and we're just kind of like throwing shit out there because it's cool to talk about. That's why I like the off the cuff, because we kind of just like go all over the place and see if we can tie it all in at the end or whatever. So like numbers guy again, let's do like a little bit of math. So let's say we're three times a week, three mornings a week, you're doing skill stuff as an example. I'm gonna use like the most extreme version of this that I can. Let's say just to paint the picture. So how would you describe that? If someone asks you, how often are you doing skills? You would say three times a week. Okay, it's not three times a week, it's 3 hours a week, right? So first of all, if you say three times a week, it already makes it sound like it's more than it is. It's actually 3 hours a week, which is not that much to begin with. Okay, of the 3 hours, to your point, maybe it's only, if it's something like wrestling where you need another person, it's actually 30-30, right? 30 for you, 30 for your partner. Okay, so now it's only an hour and a half a week. Okay, of that hour and a half, so 30 minutes per session, maybe 10 of those 30 minutes is the coach actually instructing the skill or talking to you about what we're going to do, right? So now it's only 20 minutes. So now we're at 1 hour of actually doing the drilling, right? And then in that 1 hour, how much of that time do you need to stop to rest? How much of that time do you need to stop to get a drink? How much of that time were you distracted and not actually focused? So
most, how much was intense?
How much was intense, right? So of that three times a week, we can actually boil that down to 60 minutes or less if I'm being as like the least amount charitable possible, right? So you describe it as, yeah, I do skills sessions three times a week. It's actually, no, you do 60 minutes or less per week of skill work. That's what you do if you don't do anything more than that, you know? So when you're working on, exactly to your point, is just when you're working on skills or you're trying to do things that make your skills better, you have to know that or be honest about that. Now, my second part of that is when you're, the younger you are, the less you are able to focus on one thing, right? So to you mentioned at the end there, is the skills coach smart enough to do one skill or one activity or one action or one movement for long enough? And when you're younger, that's harder to do, because what does it take to focus intensely for a long period of time? You have to be able to, in your mind, say, okay, if I do this now, I will see no payoff for the next 3 months. But in 3 months, I'll be much better at this skill, which I will then be able to use in my performance, which then will make me better, which then will make me more valuable to a scout or a coach or whatever, which then increases my chances of going off to a higher level. Like, what kid can do that?
Well, that's why, from a coaching side, that's what I'm saying. Like, so if we look at that time spent, so a lot of people would be, okay, the extra skills is good. And it is. Might be. It depends on the quality of the ice too. But let's just say if you did your own skill stuff all by yourself, might be better than a coach because you're working on one thing or two. Now, if you have a skills coach, then you're out there and he's just doing what he wants to do for a group of three or whatever, or group of 10, it might not be even beneficial, not beneficial, but might not be the best spent time. And you might not be touching a skill enough. And is the skills coach doing it to keep you interested, to keep coming back? Or is he saying, no, Eric, we're going to work on this. Your passing is not very good, or a group of guys, your passing is not very good. We're going to be working on passing for the next 2 to 3 to 4 weeks. So you can sit there passing. That's boring. Now, it doesn't have to be passing. There could be multiple things to do within passing in the skills, but can you stick to it for long enough to actually start to see the improvement of passing, right? Or skating, like you have to stick to it. So like if you go to a stick handling class or a shooting camp once a week, okay, let's do a shooting camp, okay? Do a shooting camp and let's say there's 15 to 20 kids there. Well, that you're not shooting for an hour. you're shooting for after the instruction, after the drill setups. You cannot shoot pucks hard for 1 minute straight. So it's like in an hour and a half shooting session, how much are you getting? So anyways, to get the benefit of that, you need repetitions. You need, if you're going to a camp, you're looking for some tweaking or some coaching. So you need that. So you got to ask, how much tweaking and coaching am I getting? Hopefully it's correct teaching and coaching. And so like in a hour session, like how much are you actually doing? So that's why it's important to do the time spent on your own to do the other things, right? So looking at it from a investment, it's like, okay, is it the best thing to do? I mean, maybe there's better ways of spending my money or time. Like we did, so your team, I have a lot of those guys out in the mornings. And that was one of the things I recognized with them. Like there's a lot of deficiencies, but I was looking at them, okay, we could do skill development, like the traditional pylons and stick handle and all that stuff. And that's fine. That's going to be included. But like I made a commitment to myself with them for at least a few weeks that we're going to work on passing because it's not good at all.
It is not good at all.
Right. Yeah. So we spent time and I kept telling them we're going to be doing this because in order to be a team that can compete with anybody when you have the puck, you have to be able to move it properly and all that stuff. So it's getting better, but it's been 2.5-3 weeks. And that's starting to see some difference. Yeah. So now, to not keep it boring, sorry to keep going here, but to keep a skill boring, doesn't have to be the exact same thing all the time. It can be many, many variations of that skill, right? So you can do stationary, you can do follow your passing, you can do, you know, D-to-D ups, you can do all kinds of different flow drills or whatever, but simple passing drills and stuff, but you need to spend time on it. Yeah. And I've noticed after 3 weeks, now it's starting to get, it's not exceptional. But then here's the next thing, time spent. Now you're, so this is like that military term, slow, smooth, fast, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, slow, smooth, smooth is fast.
Yeah, smooth is fast. So like I was doing some skill this morning with some kids. I did a lot of stick handling with the younger guys. And a lot of them want to skip the slow part because they don't see the benefit of it. But it's like, slow it down. Let's get the mechanics right. So you might do that. Like if you spend a good quality time on the slow to get smooth, now you've got some movement. So let's say you've mastered, you're getting it almost mastered. Now can you do it fast? So it's like all my point is so it takes a heck of a long time to get things to a point where you can say he's really good at that.
Yeah. And so my point on this was when we're talking about youth hockey, and kids and training kids. So like for these U18 kids and with the junior A club you're working with, these guys are old enough where they have the brain power, they have the brain development to understand delayed gratification a little bit more, where it's like, if I do this boring shit for the next hour today, it will help me later. Because their primary goal is not, I want to have the most amount of fun right now. That's a mature mindset. So when you're training young kids, exactly to your point of it takes time, because I can't just do passing every skill session for 4 straight weeks the way that I could do it with an older group, because the young kids will lose their shit and they'll go nuts. Even if I'm the best coach ever, if I'm the best instructor, I relate to the kids the best. They all love listening to me. They love. At the end of the day, they're going to go ape shit if we're doing the exact same thing over and over, because they do not have the brain development to properly understand delayed gratification yet. The younger they are, the more true that is. So for all the parent, this is more for the parents now, even for the coaches, but for parents as well. It's like when you're talking about what does my kid need, what can my kid actually absorb, digest, and get better at, you have to have patience, man. You have to have patience. And the problem that I see is they try to layer more and more and more for the sake of volume rather than making what they're doing more quality. And this, again, to your point, it's like, how much more do we need to do when we know that there's inherent limitations on how much time they can actually spend, how much time they can actually spend, and on the amount of time, energy, resources that we have to put into this thing. So I see an infinite number of skates that kids go to per week. It's like they're on the ice 7, 8, 9 times, you know? So it's like not only do they have the inherent limitation of not being able to focus on one skill to get better over time, But now, even in their time on the ice, they're not going to focus as much because they just have another skate. They just have another ice session. They have whatever, and they're not really thinking too much about it.
That's so apparent to me now.
Yeah, huge.
Like over the last few years, I just like the more and more ice that the players get, thinking that more is better. It's okay. Let's say it's better for volume, but that intensity and the focus just keeps dropping and dropping. Like I watch some of the kids come out, and these are good players. Come out on a morning skate or an evening skate, and it's like they're here, but they're not here. They work hard, but it's not work really hard, like to and focused work.
So, like, if we do the math on that, let's say over a 2-week stretch, let's say you're on the ice 5 times every week now. So you have 10 sessions in 2 weeks, and we do the same math, where of that, maybe you're getting 60 to 90 to 2 hours worth of actual time doing the skill over those 10 sessions. Well, now that 2 hours that you're getting is going to be decreasing. So now instead of getting a quality 2 hours, maybe now you're only getting 90 minutes, because in that 2 hours, now you're not as focused because it's just another session, or you're finishing your drill and you're just saucing it at the goalie because I don't feel like shooting hard this time. Or whatever.
You're brain dead.
So it's not only could it be that you're not developing new, better habits, but you're actively getting worse habits just because you don't feel like trying as hard, because I'm tired from my skate last night. You know, I'm tired from, I had 3 games this weekend and it's Monday morning and I have to go on the ice again today. And I don't really want to be here that much, you know? So these are all things that it's so hard to grill into parents' heads. Like the reality of what it's like being the ones training these kids, being the ones that are with these kids on the ice, seeing how they are doing the drills, how they are in terms of their attitude, their demeanor, their body language, their energy level, and all of those things. It's very, very hard when you're not the one on the ice training the kids to understand what it actually looks like and what it actually is. Because things can sound great on paper, you know, things can sound great when you make a plan that you're going to do all this stuff. But I mean, if you're a parent and you try to make a plan for yourself, the odds that you actually stick to that plan with the highest quality is probably pretty low.
Yeah,
you know,
it's hard to get good instructors. Maybe might be an issue. But that's why I think it makes it, even after looking at this little, I don't know, project or this, when I saw this, I was just kind of thinking about it. I'm like, it kind of makes me makes me look at it and say, you know, it's actually very, very worth it for someone to just shoot their pucks at home, right or wrong, yeah. Right? Without instructions, just putting that time in, because at least you know, but it's 1 hour of work, or, you know, picking the pucks up and setting it up. Okay, let's say an hour is 50 minutes, whatever, you know, it's like good quality time. But I think that's where the kids are going to get better. It could be the stick handling, could be whatever skill. And all you could, let's say, well, you skating. Well, you don't have to skate to be a better skater necessarily. Like, you can learn how to do, like, you're not going to do this when you're 6, but as you get older, you know, you could do time like single leg squats and split squats and learning how to hip hinge and working stuff that way to make yourself a better skater. Anyways, there's a lot of ways that you can do the skill. The next thing I was going to say about this, though, is like from a coach's perspective is when you're looking at, you got to, here's, so this is why I kind of brought this up too. Is like when you're coaching players, understanding the time spent delusion thing is, you can look at it as a coach and say, maybe you're coaching for a month and one day you snap because we've been working on this for a month. But if you thought that was for someone else. So if you look at, if you actually backed up and said, okay, look, what did our practices actually look like for a month? So you might have had a warm-up skate, a flow drill, maybe one day's a battle drill, whatever, a PK, this, that. And if you look at the quality of time that you spent on, let's say it was making a good passing team. Maybe you didn't spend as much time as you wanted or thought you did with your team. And maybe it's time to look at it and say, okay, we got to prioritize one or two things and make that a focus for X amount of time. And then realize that kids are not just going to get things because you did it twice, or they're not going to get things because you said it to them 3 times, right? It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time and effort and repetition, and it is what it is. So I think coaches understanding this makes them a better coach if they can actually understand this. Like, well, the results are not exactly what I wanted, or they're not getting it. So you just kind of peel back and say, okay, but I thought we spent X amount of time, but you know, really we haven't. I need to dial down, and it might even seem boring. It doesn't have to be boring. That's just maybe less variety of practice. But if you can make one thing better to layer on or build on that, I think you're in a better position.
Yeah, I think that's a huge point. Actually, that's where I was going to go next too, is talking about patience and having patience as a coach or as a parent, whatever, when you're watching your kid develop, because I think you can hammer kids with more and more volume and you'll get that short-term appearance like they are improving, and they are improving, but it's that early jump thing just from doing reps. You know, and I think there's something to be said for letting the kids learn to love the game and do things just because that's actually what they want to be doing, instead of you sign them up for this or you sign them up for that. And I think that at-home practice type of thing is where that will show. If they want to be working on it, they will. If they don't want to be working on it, then they're not going to.
Yeah,
you know,
and says everything.
Exactly. So I was having a conversation last night, frick, long conversation. We were probably talking about this for like 15 or 20 minutes with one of the parents. I had a kid on the treadmill, and I'm working on her stride, and the coach was there watching. It was a group of players on this team, and he was saying that this girl has a drag on her one foot. Like, she drags her one foot back, which is like a common thing for the young age. They're like 10 and 11, I think. And so I was explaining to him like some of the common issues that I find with skaters, and a little bit of a differences between male and female skaters, and where I find their deficiencies in their posture when they skate. Cause I noticed, this is just me, I noticed that for girls, they have that forward lean much more than boys do on average, kind of thing. And so I was explaining to him that, and how a lot of the kids, boy or girl, they don't understand how to, like, the body mechanics of how to be in their hockey stance.
Yeah, you know, the term hockey stance.
And so I was saying,
athletic stance.
Right. So I was saying to the coach, I was like, they don't know what it means when you say that. So this guy he's a coach that had played a little bit. And he goes, yeah, like, you know, when they're supposed to get low, it's supposed to kind of be like this. And I was like, yeah, you know how to do it because you played, but you don't know how to explain it. And so the issue is, when you tell the kids, you know, bend your knees or get lower or whatever, they don't know what that means or how to do that. Like, they don't know how to use their spine. They don't know how it bends. They don't know how the movements of it, right? So I was explaining to him how you can try to fix the smaller details, like the little bit of a drag, right? And it wasn't even like it was terrible, but just like, that's a little thing that we can fix over time. But the big thing of, they don't have good mechanics in their posture, that's something that's going to be like a commitment to fix or to improve on over time, you know? And you can try to do as much force feeding it as you want. It's going to be a long process. So when you're trying to teach the skating stuff in particular, it's like that stuff takes time to understand. So I gave him the analogy with, or an example with some of these, one of the grade sevens that I have from one of the academies that comes here. And these are all kids that they're not serious hockey players. They're just here having fun. They do a hockey class thing with their school, and none of them really care about doing anything, but it's now been from September until now we're in February, and all of them are just starting to be able to deadlift properly with me just pointing out, oh, like, flatten your back out, or no, you got to hinge your hips more. And if I just say the cue, they know how to fix it. That's from September until February. They're still not doing it right all the time. They're still forgetting. They're still rounding their back out. They're not in perfect posture every time they lift it, and they're not that paying attention to it that much. But at least they now know the difference between the two. And that's been September, October, November, December, January, February, right? We're on our 6th month now, and they still don't really have it, you know? And so for them, that's just one example of that patience, like, from the coaching side. It's like, what, are you going to get frustrated? Like, am I a bad coach because it's taken me 6 months? Maybe I could have done something better. But I bet you with any group like that, that's about the length of time that it's going to take for them to learn it properly.
And that variable there is, you've got kids taking a class for school, not their hockey players that want to be athletes. Okay. But that, even that, so that's one knock. So in that, you might not have the best athletes. So that's another thing. So now you're, then the give a shit meter of working out, it's just a class. I don't really care, but until they maybe do a little bit. And then it's taking someone that's not athletically inclined in general, and then teaching them the simple thing of hip hinging or keeping a flat back or whatever the exercise is. If they don't, they're not athletically inclined and their give a shit meter is low and they don't know why they're doing it and why would I want to do that, you got a lot of things going against you. Yeah. So until they decide, okay, I want, like, okay, why am I doing this? Oh, so you can squat heavy or you can deadlift well or you can be a better athlete or skate well. And if you do it, your hips hinging this way is the beginning of everything and everything starts from here. And then they go, oh, okay. Then they choose to really go through it. That you won't get anything until then. And then you're fighting also, and this doesn't even mean like that class. It could be a really good hockey player that comes in and he, let's say he doesn't have a great hip hinge with the weightlifting and you're trying to get through him. So he might want to really learn, but he might also have an ego that gets in his way of embarrassing himself in front of other people or yourself. And their ego gets in the way of actually truly learning. So they're, yeah, no, I got it. So it's the pretend wanting to know, but their ego's in the way of actually delving into it and fixing the problem. So like there's so many issues when it comes to skills or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and those, so I noticed that that's where I was going to go with this is even if I am not talking about that group and I'm talking about this group of girls that they play travel, like they're travel players, they all want to play hockey still and play at higher levels, whatever, and beyond where they are right now. Even with them, maybe instead of 6 months, maybe it's going to take them four, right? More athletically inclined. They want to learn a little bit more than these other kids do. They're still little kids, but it's like, okay, that's still a 4 month process. And then if we break that down, using the same thing we've been talking about, okay, of the 4 months, like how long is that actually? So four, right? So it's like, so 4 months have gone by. So as the coach, it could be like, man, I've been working on this for 4 months and they still don't understand the proper skating posture. It's like, well, yeah, but I do 1 hour with them a week of strictly skating with five of them. So of that hour, they're each actually only getting however many minutes, right? Of them actually drilling it and doing it. So in those 10 minutes, maybe they're not as engaged that day. Maybe they're tired. Maybe they're this, that, the other thing. So even in that 10 minutes, the quality might not be as high as it could be because of all this other shit that's going on or whatever, right? So it's like, yeah, it's been 4 months. It's like, actually, it's been 40 minutes per month for the last 4 months, you know? So that's where as coaches or as instructors or as parents, again, that patience thing, that's why I wanted to bring that thread into it, is that these things take a long time, especially when they're little kids. You know, and one of the most common comments I'm getting from people now on our videos is, particularly with that basics series that we just did on the board, is so many people are saying to me, like, it's so funny that I played, I know this stuff, but I never remember being taught it. I just picked it up as I went through the development process, but no one ever explicitly explained these things to me, except for like a here and there. And then I eventually picked it up after playing for long enough, you know? And so it's funny to hear that comment from so many people that played, because these are the people that go back and coach, right? These are the people that are going to be coaches. These are the ones that are going to be in charge of the youth and leading them along. And if they don't have another one that I hear is, you guys explain what I was thinking better than me. Like I don't have those words in the way that you guys explain it. So a lot of them will use the way we explain it to explain it, which is great. But if before that you didn't have the vocabulary, then how are we teaching the kids, you know? So that piece where it's like, okay, there's a whole bunch of variables coming into it on the coaching end or on the parenting end, that's going to contribute to how long it takes these kids to develop these skills that you're trying to force. And so layering on more and more and more and more and more isn't necessarily the best strategy when you break it down this way and we actually do the math on how much time are we actually doing this, you know what I mean? So I think it's an interesting conversation at the very least.
Yeah, I was thinking about this when I saw it. I said, it's an interesting concept that, because we all, like, right, what I studied all night, break it down, right? Did just study all night. Like, we were in we lie to ourselves or we trick ourselves or we fool ourselves, whatever the thing is, Like if you studied all night, did you actually study for, like, say it's 3 hours. Was it 3 hours that you studied? You know, if we start looking at that as and being honest with ourselves, like if we say that kind of stuff, it's like, what are you actually doing and what, how productive it is? And then from a coaching standpoint, you know, being able to get the point across is like, yeah, we spent this amount of time here. We've only spent this amount of time actually getting this skill. So it's a coaching tool, right? It's like, Eric, don't get frustrated. I know we've been doing this for a week, but a week has only been 45 minutes of actually your time doing a skill. Could it take a lot longer to be a master at this than whatever time I just said, right? So it's like good coaching cues too. And just for a coach and players to understand, like, yeah, I'm just starting this. Like I'm putting time in, but I'm not, you know, like, it's going to take time to get results.
Yeah. I think last thing for me is like, as the coach or whoever's trying to help, is you have to be able to remember what it's like to be the person that you are coaching, whatever age group that is. If it's a younger kid versus a intermediate versus an older kid versus a adult, whoever it is that you're teaching or coaching with, you have to remember what it's like being in their position. So it's funny because like one of the things that I sometimes people will say, like when I'm with young groups, is they'll mistake the sweat for quality. And so what I do with my young groups is I'm teaching them the basics of body mechanics. I'm teaching them the basics of lifting and all the introductory postures that they need to be able to do and the movement patterns that are proper. And like, they don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. That's not what they want to do. Yeah. So rather than say, okay, I'm going to maximize every second of this with what the kids don't like, I'm going to take a portion of it and do it. And then I'm going to do something fun with them that kind of does, like, includes the same thing. Now, would it be better if I could 100% just work the skill, like you're saying, the whole time? It's like, it would be if the demographic was appropriate, but it's not. So it actually would be counterproductive because now they're going to stop paying attention. They're not going to do things right. They're going to get distracted, whatever. So it's almost like, is it better to spend an hour today or is it better to spend 10 minutes per day of actual quality? You know, so it's like, if I'm going to spend 1 hour once a week, or is it better to break that up and do 10 minutes of super high quality over 5 days? Which one is better? And for me, with younger groups, that's kind of how I think of it, is that's a little bit better, where they keep touching it. They keep touching it. They keep touching it because I know how long the arc is. I don't need them to be better at it tomorrow. I don't need them to be perfect at it next week. I need them to be better at it over time. And that time will be dependent on the individual, which I don't really have a ton of control over, you know, as the coach. So I think it's important, like those two pieces of, one is understanding how to work your group. And before that is remembering what it's like to be the group that you're working with so that you can tailor these things appropriately. And when you keep in mind some of this stuff, like how much time are we actually spending, then it can help. I don't know, relax you is not the right way of saying it, but it can help you to like just take a chill because you know that this is a process now. You know, it's like you talk about what players that are going through the OHL, how it's the process. And in year one, you want to be first unit power play, but there's a process to it and there's a process for a reason because you have things that you have to learn. You have things that you need to get better at. So it's important that you keep that in mind on the player side there. But then for coaches and parents, I'm hoping that kind of makes sense the way we laid that out. So that's all I got to finish on here. You got anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
Think you're good to go?
Yeah, I think I'm good.
I had a couple other things that I was going to touch on, but I think I'll save them maybe for next week. And then we can revisit it for next week. All right? Okay, we'll stop her there. Goodbye.